Welcome to the Rap Soul Podcast, where we dive deep into the world of music that moves our hearts and gets our feet tapping. This is the intersection of rap and soul music from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. We appreciate you for listening. Share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. The podcast is hosted by 12 Kyle. Next up, the Rap Soul Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Rap Soul Podcast. I am your boy 12 Kyle. I want to thank you all for tuning in as you do each and every week. Again, this is the Rap Soul Podcast. This is the intersection where we have discussions about music and artists from the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s when it comes to rap, soul, hip-hop, and R&B. Simply put, folks, this is the best music podcast that you've never heard until right now. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Shout out to those of you who are watching on YouTube and Spotify. Listen, you see the title, Remembering D'Angelo. As many of you know, at the time of this recording, D'Angelo passed a few weeks ago. It's been on my mind because I'm such a huge fan to talk about it. And I figured that if I was going to talk about it, I needed to bring someone on. I didn't want to talk about him by myself because I literally would have made it like a 4-hour podcast. So I had to bring on my good friend, her first time on the podcast. She is one of the best photographers in the Pacific Northwest, a Grambling alum welcoming into the Rap Soul Podcast for the first time, my homegirl, Sharon. Sharon, what up?
What up? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Actually, this is like my first time being a guest on someone's podcast. So
for real? I should have had you on before then. Because we always talk music. As I mentioned, you're a Grambling alum. Shout out to the place where everybody is somebody.
Listen, unless you got your fee sheet.
My boy Eclectic, every time I have him on the podcast, that's what he finds a way to sneak that Grambling line in to, you know, any episode that we're talking about. So I would be remiss if I didn't shout out the Gram fam. Right. Shout out to Doug too, Northside Doug and Eclectic, all, you know, fellow podcasters who are Grambling alum. But I wanted to get you on because you are like me, Sharon. Huge D'Angelo fan. So let's go back. Do you remember when you first started listening to D'Angelo, or when, you know, the first song, or when he came on your radar?
Yeah, it was sometime fall semester of 95. And I'm in a car with a fellow Oregon person that was down at Grambling. And she had either the CD or the tape. I can't, you know, remember. And I remember, you know, and SDM came on, and I was just like blown away because I was like, that is like the jazziest cuss song I've ever heard
in my life.
And I was like an instant fan, like, and Brown Sugar kind of, it wasn't my favorite song. It kind of like grew on me. But when he released Me and Them Dreaming Eyes of Mine, it was a wrap. It was a wrap. Like, and you know, at that time we had a little bit of cables. Of course, they're going to give us BET on campuses, you know, 1995, you know, just his videos was on, you know, heavy rotation back then. And, I think he did Cruising first and then Me and Those Dreaming Eyes of Mine. But I do remember it was like a slow burn on campus, like only like, if you know,
right.
And then once Lady came out, that's when everybody else got on the bandwagon. And it was like, man, we've been listening to this for a while. Like, y'all late to the party.
Right,
you know,
we've been,
you know, bumping D'Angelo. So, and, you know, back then, we didn't have access to what other campuses was listening to or what was, you know, in that HBCU, you know, network. But I do remember his album being like a slow burn, like the early adopters. And then once Lady came out, it was like exploded. And my,
no doubt.
My roommate, she really loved that song.
I'm trying to think. I think my first memories of D'Angelo, I didn't know who he was. I wasn't somebody who ran out and got the album the first day that it came out. Cause again, he, at least to me, he really didn't have a lot of fanfare coming out. And, I think my first introduction to him was the Brown Sugar video. And I saw the video, and like the thing that got me was, you know, him talking to an old man, like when the video started. And then when the music started playing out, I stopped. I remember distinctly stopping because I'm like, it sounded so different. The first couple of keys just sounded really different. And so I'm sitting here and I'm watching the video, and then they show him, and I'm like, okay, he looks a little different. He didn't look as, you know, polished like you would think a singer would be. Mm-hmm. He looked like he had a couple of rough edges, you know, he was a little rough around the edges. You know, he kind of looked like a rapper, you know, at that particular time, you know.
Or a dude that was on your campus, you know.
Exactly. And at that time, I was still at South Carolina State University trying to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard the song, I was like, okay. And then I think probably within a week or so, I got the CD. And once I got the CD, I was blown away. I mean, like I didn't, and keep in mind, folks, there was no internet in 1995, right? There was no file sharing. You couldn't even go listen to it. You had to buy it, you know, just on the strength.
Sight unseen,
unheard. You know, if you heard one or two songs, that's it. You know, so I bought it, and I just remember just playing it forever. I just played it and played it and played it, and it's to the point where the Brown Sugar, more specifically Brown Sugar and Voodoo, and we'll get into Voodoo as well. They never left my rotation. Like, these are two albums that I, even to this day, I play back to back. And so it's kind of interesting because if you're on Spotify has this thing, and all the sites have this thing, but they have this thing at the end of the year where they show you who's your most played artist. Like, for the last 5 years, it's been D'Angelo. D'Angelo's been either like one, two, or three. I mean, because, and keep in mind, that's the music that he's released. Just those two, well, actually the three albums when you include Black Messiah, but those are the albums that literally have stayed in my rotation that I continue to play all the time. So much like you, Sharon, I got hooked. And then there was a little legion of fans of D'Angelo, like you said, on campus. And then when he started to pick up steam, it was like, oh, y'all late. You know what? We've been bumping this for a minute. But yeah, he was somebody that I really took to his music early. And it just, like I said, it just stuck with me. Do you remember, was there, I guess, on your campus, was there like a vibe with neo soul in more specifically, or was everybody, because I'm sure at Grambling was just like it was at South Carolina State at this particular time. Hip hop was running shit, right? So it was everywhere. So what was the neo soul movement like on your campus?
Well, let's see.
If there was one.
I would say, like, one of the best things about being at Grambling was, like, it was a melting pot, you know, like Gumbo, New Orleans, Louisiana, because we had students from, like, all over the country. And they brought their music, you know, you had your New York people, you had your Chicago, Detroit, you had California, Louisiana. So we were exposed to different, you know, because music was, like, regional back then.
Mm, you so know? Much so, very much so.
Very regional. That was my first time hearing like New Orleans bounce music when I got there in 92 and DJ Jimmy, you know, that. And mm-hmm. Then you had your bass music, you know, out of Florida.
Yep. Miami
back
bass.
Then. And then you had, you know, the percolator from Chicago.
Yep.
And you had your West Coast, you know, Dr. Dre and all that. And so you had all these students bringing their music. And so as a DJ back then, you had to play music to satisfy everybody. You know, everybody wanted to hear, you know, because it was like their home away from home, you know. And so I know D'Angelo, I know a lot of them hated that, you know, but, you know, Erykah Badu. At Grambling,
yep.
The same exactly. time I was, I think. Exactly. And so I graduated in December of 96, and I think she had came out prior to that. So they was like, oh, yeah, that's Erykah. She used to be, you know. So, yeah. Yeah. So there was people like in her video that was on campus and like, oh, she used to hang out with so-and-so and so-and-so. So that was our like introduction really to like the whole neo soul, because we had some connection to it because Erykah Badu was a student there.
Yeah, same here. We had, I can't really say there was a movement, but I agree with you 1,000%. Being at South Carolina State University, we had people from everywhere. So they, like you said, they brought their music. And, you know, I've never heard Chopped and Screwed until I got to college. I was a little familiar with go-go, but my friends, my roommate put me on a go-go and I became a fan. I was always into soul music because I grew up in a house where we played music. But, you know, Neo Soul was something different. We didn't even call it Neo Soul. We didn't know what to call it, but this album was so incredible and his rise was crazy. When we talk about D'Angelo, as far as the album more specifically, the Brown Sugar album, do you have a favorite track? If so, what is your favorite track?
Probably Me and Those Dreaming Eyes of Mine. Okay. It's something about it. Like, who says drink some chocolate lemonade? Like, and the second one, I say 1A and 1B is All Right.
Okay. You know? Okay.
Yeah. So, like the deep cuts, like not yes. the album cuts. Sometimes, yes. like the album cuts. So, Me and Them Dreaming Eyes of Mine, and then All Right.
Same. My favorite is Smooth. I love that song. I talked about it before on a different episode, but like I actually bought a piano. I have a piano in the other room. Now, I don't play the piano. My kids played it at one point in time, but they've moved on. But I always said, if I could learn how to play Smooth on the piano, I would get rid of that piano because I wouldn't need it anymore. But I haven't sat down to try it. But that song is, it is, I hate using the word perfect, but to me, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, and just singing from that perspective, the thing that I just really got from D'Angelo was that he wasn't afraid to be sensitive or show all sides, because it wasn't really gangster to tell the woman, you know, look at you, you're so smooth, when I'm around you, I can't keep my cool.
Keep my cool.
I mean, like, who does that? That's nothing that a player would ever say. You, even if you felt that way, you would never tell a woman like, I can't be around you because I don't know how to handle myself when you're around. But it was real, and I felt that.
That was that vulnerability that a lot of them.
Yes.
Well, I mean, like Jodeci said, you got me fiending. Hold on. Hey, can't leave you alone. Or,
right.
What was the other one?
Take my money, my house, and my car. For all that. Of you.
You know,
you can have it all.
They weren't afraid to be a little vulnerable and begging, you know, that begging R&B right. music.
Yes.
The begging R&B music.
So D'Angelo takes off. He has a meteoric rise. We've done episodes of as far as like, so I'm not going to break down the songs or anything like that. But then he comes back 5 years later, 2000. With Voodoo, which a lot of people think is his best work. What did you think when you heard Voodoo for the first couple of times that you heard it?
I remember getting the CD single of Left and Right.
Okay.
And I think it had maybe an instrumental, or maybe it didn't have the rap portion of it. And I remember the video coming out, and I was just like, oh, this, you know, D'Angelo different, you know, he oiled down and, you know, shirtless, and, you know, he didn't have braids. I was like, okay. And then I remember my friend at the time, God rest his soul, he did not like it at all because really? He thought that it was going to be Brown Sugar Part 2.0.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was like chicken grit, like, who makes a song like for about, like he just didn't, he didn't understand that D'Angelo has evolved as a musician, as an artist, and he was able to like recruit like the cream of the crop to work on this album. Yes. You know, like if you look at the album credits, I mean, of course, Questlove was the co-pilot. You know, you had Roy Hargrove, you had, you know, Charlie Hunter, and you had James Poisner, and you had like, you had
Pino Palladino.
And Pino. And so you have the, but as a average listener, that's not, you know, what they looking for. They're looking for brown, like a very smooth, very polished, you know, this was like it just sounded like it was like a jam session and they just chopped up some songs. But yeah, it took like I said, it was different from Brown Sugar. Mm-hmm. And so, but once you listen to, okay, Spanish Joy, okay.
Right.
One More Again, you know, Africa. Oh, Great Day in the Morning, The Breakdown.
Great Day in the Morning. Yeah. So. I'm with you. I was blown away. I remember going into it not really having any expectations of, and it, I think it's natural to, you know, with as good or as great as Brown Sugar, the album was, with that, you know, as a fan, you would want to see the same type of thing, but artists have to grow. And Voodoo, when I first heard it, I was like, yo, this is crazy. I mean, like, I loved everything from the start. And you know, people were always, you know, I mean, as soon as it came out, especially once it started gaining some steam, it was like, oh, it's good, but it ain't as good as Brown Sugar. And I think for some people, it was a slow burn, and then it just really just took off. And I mean, I would be remiss if we did not talk about the Untitled video. when the video came out, Sharon, what did you think?
I was like, oh, you know, I'm like, that was 2000, so I was like 26, you know. Mm-hmm. I had my little first apartment, or, you know, my little apartment in a little 19-inch, you know. But I'm like, every time the video came on, you just stared at it. I mean, it just stops you in your tracks. You know, you got this glistening brown dude with, you know, perfectly braided hair, and he's just singing this song. And I think it made dudes like, man, I need to go in the gym, or, you know,
yes,
I need to work out, you know, like, right. But, you know, for women, you know, that video was a blessing and a curse, you know, as we would later, you know, find out. But, yeah, it was just one of those, like, and I wasn't like lusting after him, right, like, you know, a lot of women were, but it was just like one of those, like, wow, like,
you like, I didn't know you could do that on a video.
Right.
I thought it was good. I wasn't one of the people that, you know, men, because I don't know any woman that was offended by it. But there were some men that were offended by it. But I didn't have a problem with it, but I wasn't. I think the biggest thing for me was that I had an appreciation for the song. So once I saw the video, I was like, okay, that's dope. You know, that's cool. You know, it's for the ladies, whatever, whatever. I would have done it. But I mean, at the time I was married and we had Dion. Dion was like one. So, you know, it didn't offend me. I was into D'Angelo the artist. So what he looked like didn't matter to me. But I wasn't crazy enough to think that he couldn't capitalize on his sex appeal, because how he looked in that Untitled video wasn't like how he looked in the Brown Sugar video. So, you know,
that's why, because he just looked like, we didn't see his physique because he sat behind a piano all the time, and he either had on some baggy jeans and some Tims and a sports, you know, jersey, or, you know, something. Or later on, he did a couple performances, one with David Sanborn. He has a suit, you know, and he did that. That one performance with Rafael Sadiq that they redid Lady.
Yep.
And, you know, he had a suit. So,
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, well, all right.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I didn't have a problem with it. I thought, you know, he did what he had to do. And it was good to hear Questlove later on explain how it got like that. He said they were recording, and it took them damn near 5 years to make this album, and they were recording it at weird hours. And if you know the story of how this album got recorded, and the subsequent albums from Common, The Roots, Erykah Badu, all were recording around the same time in Electric Lady Studio in New York City. But he said he would eat late, and, you know, and he said D'Angelo was gaining weight. And so he was already kind of pudgy a little bit, I guess. And so, like, somebody said, hey, man, why don't you get a trainer? And so the thing was with him, he just trained like a madman. But the difference was that because there was no Instagram or Facebook, we didn't see it. So he went from, like you said, being behind a keyboard to he comes in this video, and now all of a sudden he's got abs and muscles everywhere. Yeah, and the women were loving it. So I couldn't be mad at it.
Yeah.
I always laugh at the men who got offended by it, though. That was funny to me.
Right. And I was thinking, like, you know, after his passing, and, you know, I'm on Threads and, you know, mm-hmm. Facebook, and a lot of people either saw him during Black Messiah or they saw him during Voodoo, but I haven't really seen too many people that saw him during the Brown Sugar era. And I'm like,
I saw him in concert. That's the only time I saw him in concert was it was the Brown Sugar tour. And he performed here in Atlanta at the Fox Theater downtown.
Okay.
And when I tell you, that show was unbelievable. It was crazy. When he did Shit Damn Motherfucker, he did a rock version of it. Ended up smashing guitars, going into the and in fact, there's a not a clip from that particular concert, but there's if you just go to YouTube and type in SMDF or SDMF, you'll see it. It's someplace, I think, in like London. And it's like a 7-minute performance and he goes bananas. Anthony Hamilton is one of his backup singers at the time. But I think that was when he was on the Voodoo tour.
Okay.
But I caught the end of the Brown Sugar tour. That was one of the best concerts I had been to. I still will say to this day, it's top five concerts I've been to in my life. He put on a show. Me and my wife, Sharice, went. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And you know, eventually, probably towards the end of the show, because he came out in a tank top. He ended up ripping the tank top off. The ladies went crazy. But it was just his musicianship. I really appreciated because he was in there and he probably did like maybe, because he did some other cover joints as well, maybe a 2-hour show. And it was incredible. It was incredible.
I know like that live at the Jazz Cafe was part of his promo tour.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, I missed him during that Brown Sugar run. Like I was in school up until December of 96.
Same.
And my dad said he came up to Portland and I'm like, what? He came to Portland, but he couldn't remember like where, you know, and I tried to look on the internet, but it wasn't like a like tour. Like it was a promo tour. So if he came to Portland, I don't know where and you know, and I'm like, I must have like crossed paths or, you know, so it was when he was on the VH1 Men Strikes Back. And I watched that performance and it was that. I was like, I have to see him. I was like, I have to see him in concert. And so I'm not sure when in 2000 that came out, but not too long after that announced a tour. I shared this story on Facebook. Me and my friend Jackie, they said, you know, tickets go on sale 10 o'clock. This is before you can buy stuff on the internet. We called Ticketmaster on the three-way.
Yeah, the good old days. On the three-way.
And it was like, all right, the best seats available was like row H. And I was like, hold up, we calling like at 10 o'clock in the morning. Like, what? I was like, A, B, C, D, E. I said, let's call back because we were trying to get the front row.
Right.
And same tickets. We was like, all right. So we got them. Day of the show, we get there. And Dilated Peoples was the opening act.
Okay, shout out.
I don't remember much about their show. For real. And so at the venue that we saw him, which is at the Schnitzer, it is usually where the Oregon Symphony performs, stuff like that. So in during the intermission, they have this little chime, like ding, 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 like, all right, y'all get back to y'all seats.
Right.
So we heard the chime. And so we get to our seats and we notice there was two empty seats in the front row. D'Angelo about to come on stage. We looked at each other. We tiptoed to the front and we asked people, we was like, anybody sitting here? And they said, no. So we sat down. We was like in there like swimwear, like, oh, we front row.
Front row at the D'Angelo concert.
And so, you know, he came out. I think he opened to Devil's Pie. And by the time the third song came, people start rushing the stage. Now, mind you, this is like a seated arena or seated mm-hmm. venue. You know, it wasn't mm-hmm. standing room only.
Right.
But by the time that third, but it ended up being a standing room. And so I ended up in the front. I was mm-hmm. like pushed up against the stage because it was people behind me. And I was like, oh my gosh. But during the show, he did shake my hand because he was, you know, standing right there in front of me. And let me tell you something. The band was thumping so hard. There was a couple times I forgot D'Angelo was on stage because I was just like tuned in because, I mean, he had an all-star touring band.
Right, right. Yeah, they were cold. They were so cold.
They was thumping. Mm. And so, you know, I felt like one of them girls at the Elvis concert. Like, what? And so he stood, you know, kind of like in front and, you know, I raised up my hand and, you know, he did one of these, you know, and I was like,
did you wash your hand afterwards?
I didn't want to. Like I said, I felt like one of them like girls at the Elvis concert, like, what? I'm never going to wash my hand. You know, I shook D'Angelo's hand. But, yeah. And, it was amazing. Of course, you know, he did How Does It Feel at the end. Like mm-hmm. some people had left because they thought the concert was over and then they had to come back because he ended up, you know, ended the show with Untitled. And after the show, me and my friend was hanging out. And so at that time, I was keeping up with Questlove's blog on OK Player.
Yep, yep.
And he made a blog post. It's a couple record stores that had, you know, they was crate digging back then. And he was like, oh, get me out of this place because he spent a lot of money at Everyday mm-hmm. Records. And I think I asked him a question or something like that, just mm-hmm. for the heck of it. And my friend Jackie, she didn't know who he was, you know. But I don't know how I stumbled across the OK Player boards, but mm-hmm. I used to read him. I used to keep up with his blog. Yeah, and
I used to be in there all the time.
Yeah. And a mutual, like, group, you know, formed out of, you know, that we like. So... yeah, so that's my voodoo story. That's
crazy. Now I know you posted pictures that look like I don't know were they taken by you or were those another photographer's pictures that you posted at a D'Angelo concert?
I took those.
Okay. Wow. Wow.
Well, I had bought tickets to the show, and mm-hmm. One of my homeboys, he was touring with either Jill or Bootsy Collins. It was one of them. And then I was like, oh, I would love to like photograph the show. And so mm-hmm. he made a phone call or something like that. He's like, okay. You get to photograph the show. So I was able to take, like, that was like a career, you know, like.
Yes.
I was nervous because I was like.
Those photos are crazy.
Right. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I get to photograph. And I couldn't really like say anything to anybody, mm-hmm. like keep it on the low. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but I had met the band the night before. How did I meet them? NDIRE's drummer at the time was cool. I forgot how it mm-hmm. came together, but he knew the keyboard player and then sent a message to the keyboard player like, yo, homegirl Sharon is in Portland, da 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 da. And so I met him downtown at the Bite of Oregon, and then a couple other band members were with him. So we just connected and went back to the hotel and in the lobby, and they had this piano. And when I say shenanigans, they were in rare form that day. Like it was, and they were just playing it like, cause it was their day off. So they got a chance to kind of like let their hair loose. But I captured some footage and it was just so hilarious. Cause then the next day when they was on stage, it was all business, you know?
Oh yeah. That's how it is.
It's all business. But that day they said, one of them told me that like, that's the funnest they ever had. You know, it's like a day off in Portland, you know, mm-hmm. and their hotel lobby had a piano and a Jerry Curl wig and, you know, yeah.
That's funny.
Shenanigans galore.
I remember seeing the photos and I was like, man, like you took some really great, I mean, you always say great shots, but those are some really, really dope shots. And it was just, you know, it was just interesting to see that because, you know, well, given the fact that I know you. So it was like, man, Sharon's up close and personal with D'Angelo. Like, so it was wild. And then, you know, his career obviously takes off. He gets accolades, all this stuff like that. And then we go for the better part of 10 years without hearing from D'Angelo. And when we did hear from D'Angelo, you know, it was always something, trouble, you know, it's well documented. I'm not going to get into it, you know, arrest, car accident, you know, drug, you know, rehab and stuff like that. So he was dealing with some things. And, you know, I think, and you touched on it a little earlier, the thing that I think people didn't understand or didn't get where he was coming from was that there was a lot of things said about the Untitled video and his reluctance to be objectified, because he made mention, he was like, in several interviews, he was like, you know, I would be on stage and I'm, you know, two songs in and, you know, people yelling, "Take it off." And he's like, "I felt like a piece of meat." And while you understand that, but D'Angelo, if you're a fan, you understand also that D'Angelo's a musician. He's a musician at heart through and through. So mm-hmm. he wants you to appreciate the art. He don't, I mean, the sex sells. We know sex sells. I mean, that's just be foolish not to think that. But what did you think about how he handled that or didn't handle that part of his celebrity?
Like I said, like I was at the show at the Voodoo Tour, and you know, mm-hmm. there was a white girl next to me with curly hair. I remember because her hair was like in my face, and I'm like, you know, and you know, she was one of those like take it off type, you know, didn't okay. know none okay. of the, you know, words of the song, you know, like
don't you
that.
Just hate
like
those people, they don't like, know none what? Of the songs, but they at the concert in the front row, in the way,
in the way, and. I felt bad, you know, and just wondering, like, did he have somebody to talk to, or did he have somebody like a support system, or and you know, the record labels, they like, we want another hit, like we want, let's capitalize on this. And so they probably didn't understand, you know, what he was going through. He's a PK, you know, they didn't go to church, you know, naked. They had on a suit and tie and, you know, choir director. So like, yeah, I really did feel bad for him because he was really, really about the music, always have been, you know, the sex, that's just like a byproduct, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I wonder, like, had they shot a different video, had it, you know, had the same effect, you know? Mm-hmm. We don't know, but.
Yeah, we'll never know. I think, and what's always interesting to me is that D'Angelo didn't do a lot of interviews. I mean, if you could get sound bites here and there, that was cool. But, you know, considering as for somebody who was as popular as he was, he didn't grant a lot of interviews. And he did a sit down. I think it was two night sit down with Tavis Smiley. Mm-hmm. At the time, Tavis Smiley had a show on PBS, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I watched it yesterday. I hadn't seen it probably in a couple of years, but just his openness and his vulnerability. And I mean, like, you could just really tell, and you and I have talked about this before, like there's some people who are strictly, I mean, just artists, like, you know, one of my favorite rappers, Fonte, an artist, you know what I'm saying? Like these are, they love the music. And I just, one of the things that I was able to take from that interview was that, you know, not that he understood how and why it got to the point where women were yelling, "Take it off." But he wanted you to come to the show because he wanted to share the funk. He wanted to share the feeling, the soul, everything, because he put so much into the music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he was somebody that was just kind of mailing it in, somebody just pushing buttons, I don't think it probably would have bothered him as much. But I think there probably was a time where, you know, he probably didn't really know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm a guy. Most guys would be like, hey, you know, if I had millions of women fawning on me, I'd take it. Yeah, you probably would until it became, you know, something that you didn't want. Mm-hmm. And so he had some controversies, and then all of a sudden this Black Messiah album comes out in the middle of the night in December. Like, I never forget.
Remember being on Twitter.
Same.
We was probably on there together, like
together talking about it. Right, right.
Like D'Angelo dropped, like what? Like it was like a seismic shift. Like it just changed everything. What D'Angelo dropped, like what? What? I'm texting. I think I texted my cousin Shannon. Like, hey, D'Angelo got a new CD.
Right. It would be the equivalent of what the kids say now: break the internet. He literally would have broken the internet, and it was delivered on the internet. But yeah. What did you think when you heard Black Messiah for the first couple of listens?
It took a while, you know, like when you first listen, you know, you kind of like listen, like, and then once you get deeper into it, like my favorite is Till It's Done.
Yes. Same. Favorite song.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like the melody or, you know. And Questlove had leaked. Mm-hmm. Really Love, you know, so yep. We kind of like knew that song already. And, you know, Sugar Daddy and Another Life. Oh, no, I like Another Life, too.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
And what's the other one? Back.
Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, that's a jam, too. That was a favorite too. Like you said, I remember the night that it happened. Somebody just said, man, D'Angelo got a new album. Because here's the thing, folks. D'Angelo, by our knowledge, was never releasing another album. So it was a running joke. So it was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna, you know, I had a better chance of hitting the lottery than D'Angelo, you know, dropping an album this year.
Because and, you know, when you saw him, it was like a unicorn. Like,
right.
Like, oh, it was like D'Angelo Sidon, like, oh, he's still alive. He's, you know, like right. A picture, you know, would show up with him and somebody or, you know, like, oh my gosh, there's like a D'Angelo Sidon, like, you know, looking to see if he's looking healthy and, you know, how's he doing? And it's like, yeah, I was on Twitter that night when D'Angelo was like, oh snap. Like,
I was headed to Spotify to listen and I listened and I loved it. I think initially, there was such a rush because we were getting this music. So we all loved it. And then after a while, I had to sit and settle with it. I was like, okay, I like this. Well, this ain't as good as the other song. Okay, well, it's not as good. And then, you know, it's natural to compare. So I try not to compare it to the first two, but it is still, and even, you know, knowing that I was going to do this episode, I went back and listened to Black Messiah. Because I don't listen to it as often. I'll listen to songs, but I don't listen to it all the way through as often as I do. But I mean, again, as I said earlier, I listen to the other two damn near every other week.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still an incredible body of work. And he gets, you know, political. And I remember him telling Tavis, he was like, you know, I felt the need to speak on some. He's like, I didn't want to be preachy, but I felt the need to speak on some of these things because nobody's saying nothing. He's like, you know, this was when the Black Lives Matter movement was really, really heavy. Trayvon had been murdered, Mike Brown. So he felt like, and that's what, you know, because he was influenced by, you know, people like Curtis Mayfield, people like Prince, he felt the need to kind of go in that same path as far as saying something, even if it's just a line or two, just to let people know, like, I'm not. If you want a podcast where culture, conversation, and life collide, where you get insightful commentary, engaging discussions, and a fresh perspective on everything, then you need to listen to the 12 Kyle podcast. Hosted by the one and only, yours truly, 12 Kyle, a voice that you know and trust. This podcast will bring you thought-provoking moments, compelling stories, and a whole lot of fun. Whether you're a first-time listener or just tuning in, each episode promises to be something new and exciting. So sit back. Relax. Join 12 Kyle, myself, and my guests as we break down the world around us and give you stories that you've never heard before, from nostalgic throwbacks to everything in between. The 12 Kyle podcast is a front row seat to this conversation. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the 12 Kyle podcast, where the vibe is always real and the discussion is always worth your time. Are you feeling nostalgic for the golden eras of rap and soul music? If so, tune in to the Rap Soul Podcast. We are your weekly journey through the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, spotlighting the music and the hidden gems that shaped the soundtrack of our lives, from the powerful beats to the soulful melodies. we bring you the best of the past with fresh insights and stories. Rediscover the music that defined a generation. Subscribe to the Rap Soul Podcast and enjoy the vibes.
It's here just to make music. So I loved it. And I still, you know, if you're watching on YouTube, I got this Black Messiah t-shirt on. I still play it, still love it. And, you know, so he makes that and then he goes away again. I mean, well, he actually goes on tour for a while. But like you said, D'Angelo really, for most of his life, at least his public life, has been a unicorn. Like, I'm finding out, like I knew he had kids, but I didn't know, I'll be honest, I didn't know how many kids he had. I didn't know anything about his kids. I know, of course, with him and Angie Stone, who unfortunately, you know, passed away earlier this year tragically in a car accident, and prayers to, you know, her family and prayers to D'Angelo's kids, you know, all of them, all three of them. You know, and then they share a son, you know, who's in essence has lost both of his parents in a calendar year, which is crazy. And so, you know, we move forward and, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we get the news, you know, that he passed. Do you remember where you were or how you got the news that he had passed?
Yeah, I was in a dentist's office.
Wow.
Getting my teeth cleaned.
Okay.
And my cousin Shannon called me.
Okay.
And I couldn't answer because, you know, she was almost finished, you know, and I was like, okay, I'll call him back. And then, swear to God, I was like, I hope he's not calling me with any bad news, you know? And so she's finished. And so she goes to the front to make sure my insurance is good, you know? And I picked up my phone and somebody had sent me the article. And so I called Shannon back and that's when he told me. And it was like a gut punch. I was like, I need a moment. And when you find out news like that, it's like you can't concentrate. You know, your mind goes through all kinds of emotions. And so she came back like, oh, you know, you're good to go. I'm like, okay. And, you know, the joke is like, oh, he went into the car to cry. And mm-hmm. That's what I did. I sat in the car and I cried. And I haven't cried over a celebrity death since Michael Jackson.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I was sad about Prince. I was sad about Chadwick, you know, but I don't think I cried. Like with D'Angelo, I cried. And I'm like, oh my. I was like stunned. I was speechless. My heart sank. And I'm just like, and I had to go to work and I had to suck it up. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
And act like I'm like an emotional mess. And, you know, then I started, you know, reading and, you know, open up Instagram and Essence magazine, and I just posted, you know, I'm just like, I am just gutted. And then I think I posted, like, one of the good things is that when I did photograph the concert, a lot of my friends and family were in the same area, so they were taking pictures of me.
Okay,
taking
wow.
pictures of D'Angelo. So wow. That's one of the pictures that I took. And there's one of them where we are pointing at each other. It's kind of blurry, but, you know, it's like for that little brief moment, he did recognize me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no
but,
doubt.
Yeah, that whole day, I was just like, I was feeling like, I need to take the rest of the day off. I just couldn't believe it. Like, private battle with, you know, pancreatic cancer. I'm like, oh my. So then you're thinking like, who knew, or was he alone, or was it, you know, like, and then, you know, Questlove is, you know, pretty active on, you know, Instagram. And so he went dark for like 2 weeks, which is understandable, you know, and people were like checking his pay. I'm like, you guys are being weird. Like, people
Very.
Are being weirdos. Weirdos.
Very weird. Yeah.
Have anybody checked on everybody? And I get it, because you understand the relationship and the friendship that they had, but y'all stalking his page, you know. But I'm glad to know that he did know, and he did spend those, you know, last couple of weeks with him. And he was able to, his kids was with him, for I think three days before he passed. So that gave me comfort that, you know, and I think Rafael Saadiq went to go see him also, because the day he passed, he had a show in Nashville, and, you know, he takes people's phones away, so you can't record anything.
Right, right.
But I think I believe I read, you know, people that went to the show said, you know, he did spoke on it, and, you know, he was a little emotional. So, yeah, I still, you know, and I'm reading people's, you know, tributes, and I'm getting emotional, like, and I'm a fan, you know, like,
right, right.
But he was like your cousin or something, like a long distance cousin, you know. And even though I've only seen him twice in person, he's still like, when that's your favorite artist, because like when Michael died, like I was a mess.
Understandable.
I mean, I remember when he when his hair caught on fire. Like I'm 9, and I'm just, you know,
that's funny.
And yeah, I have more to say about that. But yeah, so like I said, when you see the year of your birth into 2020, like it hits differently. It hits differently. So yeah, it's something that it's going to take a while for us to like reconcile and realize this is our new normal, that we will not see D'Angelo in the flesh anymore. And I'm glad that there's like clips on YouTube, you know, and I've seen people like, oh, I never got a chance to see him live. And you don't want to brag, but like, I saw him, you know.
Right.
You missed out.
Yeah, you missed the treat.
Yeah, like you said earlier, like he never phoned it in. Like he gave you a show. He may have been a little late a couple times.
Not Hill late, but he was late.
Right. But he gave you his all, like 100%. And then one of the irritating things was like, oh, a tribute. Like, calm down.
Yeah, relax. There's time for that. You don't have to rush it. Like, it's not going anywhere. It's interesting to hear your story, because mine was very similar. I got a text from my homegirl, Shelly Shell, and she said, the text just said, did you hear that D'Angelo died? And when I saw it, I'm thinking D'Angelo Russell, the basketball player. Seriously, I'm not thinking because I did the same thing with Prince. Like, we all know, we all have a clock. You know what I'm saying? Prayerfully, we're here for another 100 years. Realistically, we probably won't be, right? So I just remember when I first heard that I mentioned on the podcast, I remember when I heard that they found a body at Prince's house, I never made the connection that it could have been Prince. That thought never crossed my mind. It wasn't until somebody said they think that they found Prince in an elevator. And I was like, well, what was he doing? Just chilling? Because, like, to me, Prince couldn't die. And I know that sounds crazy, but, like, I'm such a fan. And the same with D'Angelo. So when she said D'Angelo died, I thought D'Angelo ran. I said, the singer? That was my response. Because I was like, in my mind, D'Angelo's not dying. And she said her response was, yes, pancreatic cancer. And I'm like, wow. And it hit me because, you know, I too have lost, I mean, I'm sure you have too, lost family members to cancer. I just lost one of my cousins earlier this year to cancer. And, you know, I know it's different for everybody, but it could be a slow process. It could be a quick process, but you hate seeing people wilt away, no matter who they are. So my immediate thoughts were about his family, his kids. I thought about D'Angelo a lot after Angie Stone passed, because I don't know. I mean, I know they share a child together and I know how that bond can be, but I also know that there were a lot of people, industry people, who saw Angie Stone and saw D'Angelo and thought, well, they shouldn't be together. You know what I'm saying? Because she doesn't look like somebody that you would think would be with D'Angelo, which I thought was preposterous, because he liked who he liked. He loved who he loved, and he had a child with this woman. So, there, that in and of itself, no matter how she looked, if she was a plus size woman, if she was 7 feet tall, they were always going to have a connection. So I thought about D'Angelo a lot when Angie Stone passed. And then I thought about him again. I mean, outside of, you know, listening to his music every other week, I thought about him again when I heard that he wasn't going to be able to perform for the Roots Picnic in June. But I figured, you know, he may have had a, and there was something you and I both watch and listen to, Questlove Supreme. We often have conversations about it. And there was something Quest said on his I think it was the last episode or maybe the next to the last episode they did. And somebody mentioned D'Angelo and he was just like, yeah, you know, he's going to be straight. You know, and it was some off the cuff type comment that made me believe it caught my ear then, but I didn't make much of it. But I think that was his way of, you know, kind of processing. I'm just assuming now at this point, processing what he knew D'Angelo was going through, because he knew, but not a lot of people knew. So much like you, after I got the word, Sharon, I was on Twitter. I think I said something on Twitter. I can't even remember what I said, but I didn't have the energy or the capacity to even deal with it. So after I said what I said, I just kind of, you know, because now the group texts are going off. Everybody, my kids text me, "Dad, are you okay?" My kids text me, "Dad, are you okay?" Because they know that I'm a fan. They know I'm a huge fan. So, and then I hit up a couple of people that I knew were super fans. And I didn't get much work. And I'm thankful, because I do work from home, that I didn't have to, because much like you, Sharon, I didn't want to be around anybody, really, to be honest. I just kind of, you know, I talked to my wife and we, you know, she's a fan, but not like me. But she knows I'm a super fan. So she was like, "You want to talk about it?" I was like, all I could do is shake my head. Like I didn't really know what to say, because like you said, D'Angelo was like a cousin, you know, and I understand that, like I said, these musicians, they're going to leave, you know, at some point. One day, Smokey Robinson's going to leave, Stevie Wonder's going to leave, Andre 3000's going to leave, you know, all these people are going to leave. But like, I never thought that Prince would leave and leave abruptly. And like his death, Fife Dawg from A Tribe Called Quest, Fife literally felt like a cousin of mine. So, and I never met Fife before, never seen Tribe perform live. But I grew up with their music. I literally grew up with their music. So it's personal. And the same with D'Angelo. So it like you say, I'm still getting used to it. And it's interesting because the algorithms on Threads are different now. So every time I go on Threads, when I go on Thread, and I'm not on Threads a lot, but when I go on there, I see D'Angelo tributes or comments about D'Angelo. With the first day that I went on Threads after D'Angelo passed, you had a couple of posts and tributes to him, and I think you posted pictures. So it's been these last couple of weeks, and I'm glad that I kind of waited, because, like, you know, everybody's going to talk about it or what have you, but it's just been, it's been tough. I mean, I'm not one of those fans that stopped. I've always listened to his music, so he's been constant. So it's not like I had to, you know, you'll hear about a celebrity death and you'll see people post, "Oh, let me go listen to their music." Well, no, I've been listening all this time. So that ain't nothing new.
Let me tell you something. That weekend before it passed, and you can see my screenshot, like, I was in the car and I was like, what am I going to listen to on my commute? I said, let me revisit Voodoo and Brown Sugar. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was I don't know. But I was like, let me, you know, because listening to your car is like different than listening to your house. Like, you know, I mean, I ain't got the best, like, boom boom system in the car, but you know, and right. And it's crazy, like, and then a couple days later, and I'm like, why did I listen to, you know, why did God, or, you know, lay on my heart to, like, let me revisit, you know, Voodoo and Brown Sugars. You know, I haven't listened to him in a while. Like, I watch his or somebody, God bless him, loaded, like, one of the shows from LA from House of Blues.
Okay.
And it's a board recording. And a lot of times I listen to that because sometimes, you know, I'm editing photos and I need something to, like, sustain me while, you know.
Right.
And, like, I've probably seen every live performance on YouTube, every, you know, audio recording, you know, of D'Angelo. So a lot of people's, like, rehashing, like, clips, like, "Oh, did you know?" I'm like, And then some people on Thread. What made me a little irritated was that it was like brands and a couple people that I follow, they were using his music in their reels and, you know, they post. I'd be like, my reaction, listening to D'Angelo, like the YouTube videos, like you should have did this a couple years ago.
Yeah, like, and it sounds like now you're trying to profit off the fact that his name is in the algorithm, so you know that people are going to tune in, and so now you're going to have, you know, people listening and watching. I never wanted to do that because I want people to, even this episode, I want people to hear what real fans sound like, and I'm not, you know, there will be people that will listen and watch, but I don't need to have 1,000 people listening and watching. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. This episode is for us and for our fellow fans. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Questlove earlier. After I got over the shock of it, I immediately thought of him and, you know, his brotherhood with D'Angelo. You know, we all heard the story of how they hooked up and linked up. And, you know, we, like you said, he went dark for like 2 weeks. And I much like you, I got pissed off because I went on Twitter and I saw somebody the as soon as I opened Twitter, it's not what it used to be. Our Twitter vets.
Right.
We're Twitter OGs. So it ain't what it used to be. But I went on Twitter and the first comment that I saw, and this was maybe a couple of days after he passed, they said, you know, rest in peace, D'Angelo. I'm waiting on Questlove for his response. I'm like, really? Like you said, stalking the man's page. Like, I don't know. I'm assuming, well, I know for a fact Questlove doesn't have a brother physically. He has a sister. So through this music medium, he's made brothers along the way. And they really seem like kindred spirits in the music that they created, but also the brotherhood, the bond. They fell out at one point and they came back together. There's a mysterious Questlove Supreme episode with D'Angelo on it that we'll probably never hear that they always talk about. And I love the fact that as a brother, he protected his privacy because, and there are some people that felt like we should have known. No, we're not supposed to know.
Listen, was it the next day, maybe 2 days after, I blocked somebody on Threads because it was early in the morning too. I'm like in the bed scrolling. And she posted, this may be unpopular, but I think it was selfish for D'Angelo to keep his block. Like, my patience has been very, very short with people saying, you know, just some wild things. And I've been reading some stuff because some people are just dragging it. Like, I'm like,
they are. And I mean, like, why?
They're creating their own narratives about, you know, like, his relationships with, you know, the mother of his children. People know based on, you know, a couple of sound bites from this person and or whatever. And I'm like, you guys are making up your own scenarios in your head and you guys are just typing stuff just to be typing. But yeah, when I saw that, I'm like, how? Somebody that has a very, very low social media presence.
Yes.
Why? I mean, honestly, I don't think that many people knew because based on what Questlove said, he didn't know he had cancer when they did the rehearsals for the Roots Picnic. He didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so from what I gather, you know, he was officially diagnosed in July. So maybe, you know, slowly but surely he told a very few close friends and very few.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my concern. Like, I won't say concern, but I'm like, oh, did Questlove know? You know, like I said, you know, he was his brother, like his musical brother for like 30 years. So I was just hoping, like, I hope he knew because I would hate for, you know, like, you didn't tell me. I mean, like, Chadwick Boseman didn't tell Ryan Coogler he had cancer, you know.
That's crazy. But I understand. I get it. Particularly if you're a private person. And, you know, as men, a lot of times I know we don't want people to feel sorry for us. And I'm not saying that that's what happened with Chadwick or, you know, or D'Angelo for that matter. But I read, you know, Dilla Time by J. Dilla. And it's a similar thing, like very few people knew how sick J Dilla was. And I'm a super J Dilla fan. And for J Dilla to continuously work on music up until almost up until the day he died, says a lot about who he was and what he felt about music and his legacy. But yeah, I'm like you. I thought about Questlove. But it was something that he said. Well, when they canceled the Roots, when his performance, when they said he wasn't going to perform for the Roots Picnic, and then I saw Questlove talk about it after D'Angelo passed, and he said he made reference to something to the point of he said he couldn't hold the guitar up. And I was like, okay, so if he was struggling, then he probably was going to have to come clean about his health diagnosis or whatever. But it's been tough. And I can only imagine the people that are in his inner circle, his kids, his family.
His band members.
His band members.
Friends, but a couple of them.
Right.
I'm sorry.
No. I get it. I can imagine that they're probably, going through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just tough.
Yeah. And then, his services. I'm in a nail shop. And I think I posted, I'm like, I'm glad it's private because weirdos would have tried to show up to see, who's there. And, so he's a private. I knew who was coordinating the services. I made a phone call and they confirmed. And I was like, good, it's private. This is not. And some musician guy who was there, I don't even know if the service was even over yet. But I'm at the nail shop and he posted the pictures of the obituary and it exploded from there because people start saving it and reposting for likes. And I'm like, and it just made me emotional. Like it made it final. Like those, from the day we find out until, it just seemed like he's still away, just still, mm-hmm.
He's chilling,
just making music somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. He's chilling. He's back at Electric Lady chilling.
Right. But seeing the actual obituary, like it made it final. Like this is it. And I didn't read it. I kind of and I saved it so I can, look at it later. But then it just, people was reposting people, and then later on folks was, posting other pictures and somebody recorded a little footage of Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
I'm like, and it looks like they was up in a balcony so nobody could see them. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'm pretty sure if they was on the main floor, they would have got escorted out. But I'm like, you guys are so, like I said, social media could be a blessing and it could be a curse.
It is.
This whole need to, you got to
share and be the first,
loud and wrong.
Yeah. I mean, like what did you gain from sharing D'Angelo's obituary? I mean, like I saw it and I was just like, really? Like, 'cause much like you, I was happy the fact that it was something that was private. I can only imagine death is tough enough to deal with as is. It's even more difficult for his children because this is their dad. And so, to the world, he's D'Angelo, but to them, he's dad. And you don't know what kind of relationship he had with them. As a father, the last thing I want to do is leave my kids. But at the same time, I can't be crazy enough to think that I won't, because I will, because everybody does. But I would want to protect them even in my absence. And I know that he would want the same. And that's probably why he didn't tell the world that he was sick or what have you. And I can respect that as a father and as a man. Mm-hmm. But I just, when I saw that, much like you, Sharon, I was just like, I can't, I wanted to say I couldn't believe it, but it's social media.
Like some of the people that was posting, it was more like, look, I got to be in attendance. That mm-hmm. type of thing. There was one person that's like, I was, fortunate to be able, but he didn't post a picture and I respect mm-hmm. that.
Right.
You ain't got to add a picture to your post. Just like, mm-hmm. hey, I was there to send my brother off. It was a beautiful service but posting pictures and I saw, I saw the casket and I was like,
I didn't see the, I didn't need to see the casket.
Yeah. You know, like the Instagram algorithm, they show you people that you don't follow more than people you
That's
do follow.
That's true.
You know, and I'm scrolling and, you know, and I'm like, I was like, oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So
I saw a lot of that on Threads, a lot of people commenting and stuff. And I understand it, but I go back to the question, why? I mean, like, okay, is it not enough that you can just tell us, hey, I went to D'Angelo's funeral? I mean, I don't know that you're going to gain any money from going to his funeral, but, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe if you sell the obituary to TMZ for $100, you get $100. I don't know, but I guess, like I said, you and I are social media vets. We're Twitter vets. We go way back to when nobody was on these social media programs. So I think ultimately, like you said, it's final. So then people talk about legacy. What do you think D'Angelo's legacy is?
That he didn't compromise and he made music on his own terms. There's rumor, I won't say rumors, but, you know, he was working on some music and I think he was working with Rafael Sadiq. So, you know, on their own time, when they feel like it's the correct way to release it to the fans, because, you know, it's been 10 years, like, since Black Messiah was dropped. So it's like, it's like, we're due for some new music. And, right. You know, we were hoping, you know, and people like, oh, we never got a Tiny Desk. And, you know, DJ Cousin B did post that it was in the works, you know.
Wow.
Like, he reached out to somebody in D'Angelo's camp and they was working on something. So people's like I said, people make up scenarios. I mean, like, I get so frustrated because I'd be like, you don't know what you're talking about. But
right.
I'm not one to, like, argue on, you know,
of course,
social media or get into Twitter, you know, spats and this, this, and that. And I just scroll and I'd be like, you don't know what you're talking about. No. You wrong. No, that's not correct either. But, yeah, it was in the works, or, you know, he was aware, and I think he agreed, and, you know, maybe he was sick, or, you know, and we don't even know what he looked like.
And I don't want to know. I don't need to know how he looked the last time I saw him. It's fine with me.
Versus. I think it was Versus, you know.
Yeah, Versus. And he was cool as hell. He had the cigarette, and I never forget, he was playing Nothing Even Matters. And I was like, yo, if Lauryn Hill comes out, I'm going to lose my mind in my house. And her came out. And I love her. She's so dope. But it was good seeing D. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I agree. I think his legacy, obviously, is in his kids. And I think his legacy, I think, is, like you said, just being himself, his authentic self. And he was funky. And mm-hmm. that's the thing that I will always remember about D'Angelo. Everything that he put out was funky.
Yeah. And you can see it in his live performances. You know, like, and people are like, oh, who's the next, you know, da 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 da. And then, like, no, like, we can, like, I did offer one artist, but they don't do the same type of music, but energy is on 10, band is tight. You know, you can hear those musical influences of, you know, James and Michael and, mm-hmm. and whatever in their live performances. And, you know, it's a big party. And, like, I've seen this artist plenty of times and it's he never phones it in. So,
okay.
But he does, like I said, does a different type of music. So
okay.
He wouldn't be like on the same.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, on the same, like, lane as, you know, because he does different type of music. So,
okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody could feel his shoes because that was, like, authentic. That was nothing you could, you know, fake. Like, it was in him. He was a church boy and he carried that with him through all his music. You know, they's like, you can't take the church out of him, you know?
No, you can't. <Amen. laughs>
And I don't know if you watched the documentary, Devil's Pie, but it, mm-hmm. yeah. So that one, it filled in some, you know, because I remember the trailer coming out, like, oh, what? And then
Then it disappeared, like nobody knew anything to happen.
Right. And then poor lady who made the documentary, they've been chopping up her stuff and creating content.
And I mean, like, it's so many people that, because what happens is people are taking bits and pieces of the content and they're putting it out. And then you always see in the comments, hey, where's the rest of the video? Where can I find the rest of the video? And nobody's saying it because they don't want to refer them back to the original Devil's Pie documentary. But yeah, I saw it. I thought it was dope. I've loved seeing some of the videos. I've loved seeing some of the interviews that I didn't see when he was alive. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I went back to that Tavis interview, which I thought was, if you guys get a chance, go back and check out that Tavis Smiley interview. He was very open. And Tavis, you know, I have my issues with Tavis, but he asked some great questions. I hate when people get it, when my favorites get interviewed and you ask them these cookie cutter questions that, like, you know, we know you were born in Richmond, but I mean, like, tell me about your upbringing. Tell me about being in a Pentecostal church. Tell me about, you know, and D'Angelo mentioned, and I always laugh when I see him talk about this part, but he talked about how the old people and the old women in the church used to tell him, like, hey, now don't you let the devil take your talents. Meaning, like, they didn't want him to take his music and take it to the secular world. But that's how we got to know Michael Eugene Archer. You know, the world knew him as D'Angelo, but he was just Mike or Big Mike to them. And his legacy will live forever. I think one of the great things that I always say about artists, particularly when they pass, is that we bring them back to life every time we press play. Mm-hmm. So I find solace in that. And, you know, I've never stopped playing his music, so I ain't about to start stop now. Any final thoughts on D'Angelo before we get out of here?
Man, I feel like I grew up with him. Like, we were both 21 when, you know, you know, that's when you're like an adult, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, you grew up with his music. And I'm just grateful that I got a chance to see him, you know, in person and concert, and, you know, I got to experience like a real D'Angelo show. And not to like brag, but I'm not relying on YouTube clips because,
right.
But yeah, I'm still sad, and I'm mm-hmm. still like, oh my gosh, you know. And I'm wearing this Michael because they released, you know, the trailer yesterday, and you're just like,
it was crazy, right?
Trailers, like, and you know, social media, they got a whine and complain. It's, they've made their whole life like being a career whiner and complainer.
I don't pay him no attention. I don't. I'll be there when the movie comes out, because I'm a fan.
Just scroll. That's all I do. I just scroll. I'd be like, oh my gosh. But I know his daughter is a singer, and she released a song like a couple weeks ago, and, you know, his son, you know, so his legacy, like you said, will live through them. And based on the mother of the youngest one, he, you know, plays multiple instruments. And so he may do something. He may not do the same music as his dad, but, you know, he may forge his own, you know, lane, you know, and do his own type of music. So, yeah.
I think my final thought is something I've said before. I'll say it again. Brown Sugar, the song, is about weed. It's not about a woman. I love how he cleverly wove that in. You can debate with your mama.
Right.
To me, and I'm clearly in a minority with this, but I think Brown Sugar is slightly better than Voodoo. I'm not going to argue with anybody if you said Voodoo's better, but I think Brown Sugar's slight. But in fairness, I think part of that is because I had Brown Sugar for a long time.
And I We all did. For five years.
For 5 years. And, you know, much like you said, Sharon, I love the fact that, you know, you wasn't going to move him to make another album. He was going to do it on his time. So he did a lot. He sang a lot. And he made me feel good. And he made me feel good about the music. And I'm a forever be a fan. I'd be lying if I said I was disappointed that he's no longer with us. But like I said, I bring him back to life every time I press play, and I can be at peace with that. I just hope that he's at peace. somewhat misunderstood, I think, to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But he's an artist that loved music and he loved people. And at the end of the day, we can't ask for much more. But Sharon, I got to thank you for coming through. I appreciate it. Anything you want to plug or tell folks where they can find you, or you could just be like, no, I ain't put my business out there.
No, like I said, this is my first time ever being a guest on anybody's podcast. So
You got a dope microphone too.
Listen, it was on sale at Best Buy. I've been wanting one, and I was at Best Buy. I was like, you know what? Let me get this thing. And so my coworker was like, oh, you got it. I'm like, so I'm just gonna like wait and see what happens with any new music, like anybody else. Continue to, you know, play his music, watch all the videos on YouTube, because you know that's why we got. And you know, just be supportive of, you know, his bandmates, you know, and their projects, and you know, just give them space to, you know, that's the thing, just to give them some space and grace.
I want to thank you for coming through. You said you had a new mic, so I was like, okay, it's perfect. It won't be the last time. We got to do this again, because y'all don't know this, but she's a huge music fan. I mean, well, you probably know this by now, but a huge music fan, very knowledgeable, fellow HBCU grad as well. Maybe we have to get you back on and talk about, maybe get you on the 12 Kyle podcast to talk about your time at Grambling. I've heard some stories, but I know you got some more.
I got time. You know, maybe my cousin Derek, who...
Yep. Shout out to Derek.
Yes. It's crazy. Like, I'm like, oh, we never met face to face, but I forgot how we connected. But then I told my cousin, oh, like, this is somebody you should follow. Like when mm-hmm. Twitter went in that, like, you should follow him. You know, you guys are fathers. You guys like sports. You guys love, you know, some of the same musical, you know. So I'm glad that worked out and y'all could, you know, interact. And
it's crazy because Derek moved to Houston, and I mm-hmm. was in Houston, like, right around and say, well, right before I think he moved, I was mm-hmm. in Houston for work, and then I moved, then I came back here. Well, I was back and forth between here and Atlanta and Houston, and so I didn't get a chance to meet him, but I'll catch up with, because I gotta go back, because I gotta go get me a Trill Burger. So next time I go to H-Town, I'll definitely check Derek out. But yeah, we got to do this again on a little bit more happier note.
Right.
But you guys know where to find me, the 12 Kyle podcast, the Rap Soul podcast. We drop new episodes every Thursday and every Sunday for the 12 Kyle podcast, every Monday and every Friday for the Rap Soul podcast. That's going to do it for us. So for the great photographer / music fan / HBCU Graham fam alum, my homegirl Sharon, I am your boy 12 Kyle. We'll catch you guys next time. 5,000. Chill.
Thank you for listening. This concludes the episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Rap Soul podcast. You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow the podcast on social media. And feel free to continue this discussion on our Reddit page. More importantly, share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. Until next time, 5,000.